And welcome back to the big broadcast. Deb was just strolling down memory lane with us here, reminding us about Manpower. Back in the day when Manpower was around, they got something similar now, I'm sure. That the employment insurance people have got some other programs in place, but there's no boards where you can find a job, that's for sure. I remember doing day temp jobs, you know, and the only temp agencies were Kelly Temps, if I remember, back in the day, you know. But now it's, as you say, they're popping up like dandelions. Because nobody, for whatever reason, feels obliged to hire people. You know, we talk about benefits. I mean, one of the traps for people on social assistance is the fact that they get a job. They're no longer going to have things like prescription drug coverage. They're no longer going to have things like eyewear coverage. They're no longer going to have dental. At least it's just, even if it's twice a year for a cleaning, it's still something. Because nobody's offering benefits anymore. You know, those things are gone. I mean, you know, you were talking about your father being a retiree at the Motors. And something I spoke of yesterday was the fact that, you know, these people who are retirees thought that they were going to have a pension plan that was going to be long, stable. It's going to be secure funding for them as they go into their retirement, into their golden years, and then off this shuffling off the mortal coil. But what we've seen with successive negotiations, especially with the larger unions who are now merging, is that people who are already off the rolls, if you will, the people who are already benefiting from these pension plans are now suffering because we're seeing clawbacks in renegotiations. We're seeing new contracts where the workers are like, well, we'll give you this, but you're going to have to give up this for the pension recipients. And of course, the pension recipients have no negotiating power at these tables. So again, we're penalizing people. Large corporations get to put that money in their pocket. And, you know, it sounds like I'm bashing the corporation, listeners. And you know what? It's because I am.
They need to be bashed.
Well, you know, if we want to talk about the face of poverty, we should talk about the face of greed, because I think a lot of this problem, a huge amount of this problem, goes right back to the fact that, you know, the people with the money have direct access to government. The people who don't have money don't have a voice. Then they don't have a voice because they can't afford lobbyists. They can't afford to have consultations, private consultations, if you will. I mean, there's a lot of talk lately in the media about pay for access with regards to members of parliament and provincial governments. The greatest example of late would be the fact that Bill Morneau, our finance minister, who in his last budget, in the 2015-16 budget, said that they were going to be closing loopholes, so they were going to start to tax things like dividend income. And then a week ago, after a conversation with some Bay Street friends, they decided they're going to walk that back. So now they're not going to do that. So that was money that could have been put right back into the pockets of the government, which meant that was money that could have been provided for things like affordable housing, for instance, or additional funding to transit, or even just an increase in social services expenditures. That's gone now. It's gone because the government's decided they're not going to do that. So who is the voice for the poor then? Who is the advocate? Who are their lobbyists?
I think that we all need to be advocating for each other. I think that we need to stop with this, it's mine, mm-hmm. and you can't have what's mine. We mm-hmm. need to adopt an attitude that's more about need than greed.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people out there that they have so much more than they actually think they need. And I find myself that anyone who lives below the low income cutoff, anybody who lives in poverty, they can have nothing and they will still share everything that they have with you. They are the most generous because they know what it's like to have absolutely nothing and they don't want to see anyone suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And when they tried those, do the welfare diet for a week or do the food bank diet for a week, that was a joke. I actually read one woman's blog where she was, after the third day, she was saying, wow, I think I've lost 5 pounds. I don't know what everybody's complaining about.
Yeah, because it's a weight loss program. Yeah, poverty is a weight loss program. Yeah, that is, that's scary.
I think youth poverty is something that's going to be more and more of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
When I looked at the caseload statistics for people on welfare in Northumberland County, now this is from their 2015 business plan. That was the most recent that I could find. 41% of the people on welfare in this county are between the ages of 18 and 29. 41%. Following that, the age group 30 to 54 is 38%. And then 55 to 65, it's 20%. So we've certainly seen growing youth poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And for kids who grow up in homes without enough, they're not likely to do very well in school or even stay in school. And of course, at when they're 17, 18, they know everything. They don't care what anybody else thinks. But a job that may be perfectly satisfactory to them when they're 18 is not going to feed a family when they're 30 and 40.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to get them a house if that's what they want. It's not going to get them anything.
Well, we're raising but we're raising a whole class of kids now to believe that home ownership is just not something they're going to ever be able to do. You know, this is the first generation I read recently. This will be the first generation that will enter adulthood poorer or worse off than their parents, than the parents' generation. I mean, we're talking now about a regression in terms of any type of hope, any type of advancement. I mean, there's a good chance that you'll get a job when you're 18, from 18 to 29, and that will be the job you have for the rest of your life, unless you're lucky enough to find some way of going back and getting re-educated in some other field, which, again, brings up the other issue of, you know, here we are again, talking about taxpayers paying to train people so that employers can now have skilled, trained people. As I said before, you know, when I got a job in my 20s, they gave me training. I learned how to do the job on the job. It wasn't something that they were unwilling to do. They back in the day, you know, and I'm not that old, folks. I'm only 50. But back in the day, you know, employers preferred to have, if you will, raw talent because they wanted people to be trained to do the job they wanted them to do and do it their way. That's not the case anymore. Nobody wants to pay to do that.
No. I think that's why we end up with a lot of older people now mm-hmm. not finding employment because people, when they look at the training, people would rather put money into training a young person mm-hmm. than to retraining somebody that's older. So, I mean, we have, although we do have quite a large youth unemployment problem, I think that you're going to see it with the older generation as well because if they're not making ends meet, they're going to have to find work and they're not going to find it because people are just going to consider them untrainable and not worth the investment.
Well, that's going to bring it to a close. We are going to have this conversation yet again because this is there are no solutions at this time. The province is listening, apparently, but that's all they're doing. Here are Rio Statics, a bad time to be poor.